Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Just who are the men running for president? The names Barack Obama and John McCain are household words, of course, especially in this record-breaking marathon of an election season. But now that the contest is down to two, the campaigns are focusing a lot of attention on defining for American voters just who the candidates are as men, what their strengths and weaknesses are, what they value, and what they intend to focus on if they win the White House. So what are the candidates saying and doing, and what are voters taking away? My guests today are here to provide some analysis on that. Bob Ray Sanders is Vice President and Associate Editor of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. William McKenzie is Editorial Columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Guys, great to have you back. Welcome to Think.
Hey.
Thank you, Chris.
Good to be back.
So I want to start with this. Aside from being defined by their party's traditional platforms and philosophies, as every major candidate is, how do these two guys differ from what their parties have traditionally said and the positions that they have held?
Whoa, that's good. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I think Barack Obama has yet to distinguish himself from where his party was, and that is when Bill Clinton left off, he was a moderate Democrat. He was a very successful moderate Democrat. And since then, I think the Democratic Party has increasingly moved more left, and I think Barack Obama reflects that. He has many strengths. We'll get into those in a minute. But I think in terms of his policies, when you look at it, he says very little about controlling spending. He says virtually nothing about the coming fiscal entitlement slash entitlement problem we're going to have. He's usually about adding more spending for seniors and tax breaks or more money for energy alternatives, all of which we may need. But there's very little in his rhetoric about trying to control, to be more fiscally responsible, which was a big deal under Clinton and which he spent a lot of time talking about. So I don't think he has quite moved himself away from where the Democratic Party is today. And there was a good op-ed piece by Matt Miller, who worked for Bill Clinton in the 90s, arguing that it's really time now for Barack to do what Clinton did, and that is to distinguish himself from the mainstream of the Democratic Party.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not sure I agree with all of that. But
that's why
you're
here.
We got an hour.
I think he has distinguished himself from the general Democratic Party, and for a reason, because he can't be the same guy. He can't be Bill Clinton, doesn't want to be Bill Clinton. Change is part of the message. I mean, it's written on the new plane that they just unveiled. And I think he is representing change from the old establishment, including Bill Clinton, even though he, you know, distinguished himself from the ones prior. But this guy has come up with an idea, and even though he, like Bill Clinton, he has moved to the center. I understand that. I understand why he's doing it, including wearing the lapel flag pin.
But I don't think he has on economics. But go ahead.
But let's talk about economics, because you can't talk about economics without talking about a war that we're spending $2 billion a month on. Now, so if you get us out of that mess, what can we do about economics?
Right, but I don't think, to be realistic, it's going to take us a while to recover the costs we're paying now in Iraq. So, you know, arguably, at least the first 2 years of Barack's presidency, if he's elected, you know, he's not going to be able to capitalize on those funds coming home. But even if he were able to do so, I hear very little in his message about controlling the growth of entitlement spending and making some of these hard choices that we're going to have to make going forward.
You're talking about cutting Social Security and Medicare?
Yes, changing how those programs are calculated, how benefits are paid out. Medicare is an extremely technical program. You can't explain it in easy sound bites. It's tough, but it's going to have to be changed some to be able to afford it for after you and I and the baby boomers retire.
I agree, and I think that's on the agenda. But right now, we are facing a greater economic crisis. When people are losing their homes, people can't even afford to drive to work, people can't afford food for their babies. You've got to address that economic problem before you even get to Medicare and Social Security, which you've got to get to.
Right. Well, let's apply the same question to John McCain. He's got a tough road to hoe in that he's hoping to follow up an existing Republican administration that has really soured a lot of people, including lifelong conservatives, based on what has happened largely with the war, but now also the economy. What makes McCain different from the GOP as a whole?
Well, I mean, earlier I would have said John McCain was very different because I think he was a maverick. In 2000, had John McCain been the nominee, number one, we wouldn't be in the mess we are in now. I really do believe that. But once he became the presumptive nominee, John McCain started morphing himself into George Bush, even though he tries to keep a distance. But when you come to the economic situation, including keeping the Bush taxes there that he was against, he actually voted against, and now he's talking about keeping those tax cuts there, I don't see any difference. I think he's morphing more into what the old Republican establishment would be because he needs their base support. And I don't know where they would go other than John McCain, and I don't know why he has to pander to them, but I think that's exactly what he's doing.
Right. I don't necessarily disagree all the way down the line. I think McCain's heart is that of a maverick Republican. Peggy Noonan, WallStreetJournal.com columnist, former Reagan speechwriter, wrote a piece the other day about let McCain be McCain. And I really kind of agree with that because the guy's instincts are that of a more independent-minded Republican. I think he's, for the most part, a socially fair guy, if you can put it that way. I think he's also a fiscal conservative. He does worry about things like entitlements. And he's cast lots of tough votes on those things. Heck, he even opposed the new Medicare drug pharmacy benefits that Bush and Congress passed. You know, there probably aren't a whole lot of Republicans that did that. So I think he is – what I would love to see him do is to emphasize that part and also to just step out of the box on immigration, where he was a leader on that. He's kind of hedged some now, and I can understand the politics within his party. He's got to shore up the conservative base who's fearful of a comprehensive immigration reform. But heck, the guy was the author of it at one point. He was bent out front.
But he said he wouldn't vote for it now, right?
Well, he wouldn't vote for the one that went through 18 months ago, I think it was, 15 months ago. But that's where his heart is. He knows we can't do it just by building walls or being tough on the border. So just go ahead and make your marker. One thing I've been writing some about are various subsets of Latino voters. And I've been trying to zero in on Latino evangelicals and Latino Pentecostals, both of whom are natural, likely McCain voters. But they really don't like the Republican Party drift on immigration. And he could lose them because of that unless he comes around.
And frankly, he and Obama don't differ that much on immigration policy, except that McCain is really really talking more about border patrol than he is talking about true immigration reform. And that, I think, is going to get him in trouble with his own party more so than anything else. But I agree with Bill that when it comes to the fiscal responsibility, he would, I think, veto those earmarks that get into every bill that we pass, every budget bill that we pass. So I think he's true to that. So that's where he really differs with this president, who has been one of the biggest spenders that we've had in a long time.
You know,
Bill, I'm just going to reintroduce you guys so that people know who's talking. Bill McKenzie and Bob Ray Sanders are my guests. We're talking about how Barack Obama and John McCain are establishing themselves and defining themselves as candidates for the presidency.
Well, I was going to say we talked a little bit before we went on air about a piece written by a professor, John Steele Gordon, who is making the argument that in 1896, lo and behold, a moderate conservative who wasn't very flashy and wasn't very articulate won the presidency, and that was William McKinley. He defeated a very charismatic, very popular Democrat named William Jennings Bryan. After I read that piece, I got to thinking that is probably the best articulation of McCain's chances because McCain can't out-articulate Obama. And I'll get back to some of Obama's strengths in a second because I think he is a very attractive figure.
Well, but McCain is not flashy, but he is charismatic. People like him.
But I don't think he has the wow factor that Obama did. You know, when Obama was here at reunion, I mean, there was just a wow factor of the guy. McCain doesn't have that. He is a moderate conservative. He's been lined up on environment issues to the satisfaction of a lot of environmental groups. So, I mean, he's not a traditional conservative, and he's kind of a blend of those things. But he's not a guy who is given over to flashy rhetoric, but he's a guy who probably people like the gutsy soldier he was, and I think he ought to play to that strength.
And I think he is playing. I mean, that's what he is playing to a great degree. But he is dull, frankly. I mean, you don't want to spend 2 hours listening to him talk. I mean, I don't, especially when I think I already know what he's going to say. And I've heard Obama's stump speech at least, 50 times over the past 6 months. But at the same time, I think that what McCain does offer, if he has that maverick instinct, that we all know him to be, and plays on that more so than trying to become another George Bush, I think he has a better chance. But Obama is the guy who's going to distinguish himself by being the contrast to whatever McCain is. I mean, when those two get side by side, speak at the same place at the same time, Obama
he's
just going to come out on top. Now, will that carry over to the voters? When I look behind McCain when he's talking and I look at the people behind him, and they all put people behind them now, it says John McCain's people say something to me and Obama's people say something to me, and Obama's people are more America than McCain's people behind him. Now, and he's got to change that image.
Right. What I do like about McCain is he's going into these town hall settings and just kind of vamping it. And he'll have his speech, and then he'll have question and answer from people. And it's not like Bush's thing, to my understanding. I don't think these are screened folks coming in. That's what he wanted Obama
right.
there with him. And I've seen McCain do this in New Hampshire back in 2000, and he is good at that. He is not a speech giver, but he'll, like, you know, we are here. He'll sit there and interact with you, and he knows his material. He knows what he's talking about. I think he's quite good on that. I think it would be maddening for some of the strategists, because those town hall meetings can go off in various different directions.
Right.
They don't get their theme of the day out. But that's a strength, and he connects with people like that. I think that is good. But I just think, you know, Obama is going to speak in Denver at whatever the new Mile High Stadium's name is. I was just up in Denver a week before last. There are 75,000 people there. I can guarantee you now it is going to be phenomenal. It is going to be off the charts. He is going to be terrific.
So Friday, the White House floated this language that is still sort of hard to understand, and there were a bunch of conditions attached to it, but noting progress in the war in Iraq and noting some progress by the Iraqi government to sort of take control of itself. The White House talked about considering a general timeline for withdrawing troops. What does that do to John McCain, who has adamantly refused to even consider something like that, when you have now the White House in the middle, ironically, and you have Barack Obama staying very fixed on 16 months?
Right. I think it puts McCain in a bit of a box because he's the one who has basically said, we're not going to go until we're sure this is a done deal. Having said that, I can guarantee you Bush is not going to be signing on to some sort of timeline that he doesn't feel is going to sufficiently satisfy his desire to leave office. To not leave office with Iraq in a mess. He's not going to sign off on a bunch of troops coming home and thinking it's all going to fly back in our face. So I don't want to read too much on what the timeline Bush is signing off on to is, but it's clearly a move in a direction away from where McCain is. My reading of this is I think this is Condi Rice, Secretary of State, finally trumpeting or triumphing over some of the conservatives within the administration, and this battle's been going on for a while it's now decided and coming to the fore right here in July before the election, no doubt. Political considerations. However, I think this is just the way the battle internally played out, and now she's won, and they're going to go forward with this.
I think this definitely works in Obama's favor. I mean, when you've got the president of the United States and that administration talking about whether it's a timeline or a time horizon, whatever it is, we are into a timetable for withdrawing troops from Iraq and at the request of the Iraqi people and the Iraqi government. I think that has to work in Obama's favor. And there are a couple of things, including the president saying that we're going to finally send somebody to deal with Iran. Obama is looking pretty good right now, particularly as he is out of the country.
My guests are Bob Ray Sanders and William McKenzie. We are talking about how the presidential candidates are defining themselves for American voters. We'll return after a short break. You're welcome to join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking about the 2008 presidential elections today with Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. This is a fun time in any election because the rumors start to fly about vice presidential choices. And my favorite theories right now are that each candidate might cross parties, that McCain might take somebody like Joe Lieberman, and that Obama might consider Chuck Hagel. And I guess those only have validity because someone wrote about them and published them in a newspaper. But I'm wondering what you think.
Well, first of all, I don't know who McCain will choose. I mean, I think Romney is still probably at the top of the list right now.
They've been very close lately.
I think Lieberman is too old, among other things. I mean, he has some other problems too, but I just think he's just too old. And I don't know that he would get as many independent voters as some people think he might get. With Obama, I don't know. I mean, obviously people are waiting on him to say Hillary Clinton's name. I don't think Hillary Clinton brings as much to the ticket as some people think. I think she may bring more harm, which means that if he doesn't pick her, he can't pick another woman. So anybody talking about, you know, a governor from whatever state.
You don't think he can pick another woman other than Hillary?
No. If he's going to pick a woman, it has to be Hillary.
Huh.
That would be the ultimate insult to Hillary Clinton. And I guarantee you she wouldn't be helping very much on the campaign trail. I think he has to pick probably a Southerner or a Midwestern guy. And that's I think he'll be white, not Hispanic, not ethnic in any other way. That's what I'm thinking. And I have no idea who that is, but that's where I think he's got to go.
If I weren't going to pick Hillary Clinton, then I would go for a national security hawk, somebody who's going to reassure people that Obama knows the world and is not going to be out of the mainstream in the world. So that leaves you to some of those who are mentioned, like Sam Nunn. Now, Sam Nunn may be a little bit too old that takes away from a little bit of Barack's message about being a young, fresh face versus McCain. But Sam Nunn, conservative Democrat from Georgia, retired senator, good on a number of different fronts. He is there as a possibility. Joe Biden is not a conservative Democrat, but he's not a left-wing Democrat, candidate himself, Senate Foreign Relations Chairman, been in the Senate for 35 years, knows the world, knows the players. And what Obama needs to do, and it's not his fault, he's fresh and he's young, and you know he doesn't know all these people the way these other people would. And so he needs to be able to reassure people that, you know, my administration can pick up the phone and talk to these people and understand who they are, and they aren't just going to run circles around us a little bit like Khrushchev did Kennedy in 1961 in Vienna. So anyway, that's part of it. On McCain's side, I think he needs a scrambled equation. I think Romney would be a disastrous pick because I think he's just too much of a flip-flopper, and he just looks too much like a guy who's just desperate to be in the limelight. Smart guy, but I just think he's too desperate. I think I understand the argument why he wants a conservative. I would scramble the equation. I'd look really hard for somebody like the woman who's head of Hewlett-Packard, who has been his campaign spokesperson, Carly
Fiorina.
Yes. If not her, somebody like that, somebody from the business world, somebody who is and I'm talking here specifically about a woman that could add some freshness to the ticket. I also would look at somebody. I would scour to find if there is a Latino business leader who would be able to come in and play at that level, just to scramble the equation. Outside of that, maybe I go for the governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, because he could perhaps deliver Florida, and that's a big state for McCain to win.
And he's going to get married just so he would be eligible now.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you're going to have a bachelor, right?
Right.
You can't have a bachelor running.
Let's go back to Hillary, though. I'm not completely haven't closed the loop yet on Obama not selecting her. And I understand the downside to it. I would hate to be Barack Obama and have Bill Clinton breathing down my neck all the time. I wouldn't like that. But she can deliver votes. She can deliver lots of women voters, and she can deliver what apparently she can, working-class white voters.
Yeah, but can she deliver them without being on the ticket? And I agree with you, and I think the Obama campaign has said as much, is that they're more worried about Bill Clinton than they are Hillary Clinton. I mean, what do you do with him? I mean, assuming you get elected, what do you do with Bill Clinton?
People keep saying troika.
Appoint him ambassador to someplace and get him out of the country.
Yeah, if he's married to the vice president, what do you do with Bill Clinton? And I'm not sure what you do.
Ambassador Australia.
Well, wasn't that a problem for Hillary Clinton? Why wasn't that an issue with her? Why didn't people say?
Because
Hillary Clinton never worried about having him.
It's a different. Bill Clinton can't stop himself. He in front of a microphone, in front of a stage.
Yeah.
It's just who he is, and he will command a room.
And I'm not sure people weren't saying that about him, even with Hillary. I mean, I think that was in the back of some voters' minds during the primary. Is wait a minute, do we want Bill Clinton back in the White House? Period, in any form. You know, outside of being an ex-president, being appointed to a certain commission or doing some great things, goodwill tours or whatever. And he'll be able to serve this presidency if they call up him, and I'm sure he will. He'd love to do that. But I just don't think they can go there. The only way I see him appointing or asking Hillary to be on the ticket is that that's the only way they think they can win. And right now, I don't think they believe that.
Right.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number, or you can send email to think@kera.org. You brought up Latino voters earlier, Bill, and I think it's interesting in this election because this may be the first time that Latino voters are not assumed by any side to be a solid bloc. They're not assumed to be a group of Democratic voters that might get stolen away by the GOP. But in fact, I think Americans are finally developing the cultural sensitivity to recognize that Latino voters may have a variety of interests that would take them toward one party or the other.
Right. Well, you know, for all the hand-wringing over Bush and his failed presidency, all this, don't forget that Bush did very well with Latino voters in 2004, not just 2000. And so Republicans can't afford to slip much below his 40% number, I think it was, because that's going to really hurt him. Then they aren't going to get beyond 40% in this election. But McCain has really got to pay attention to this, because if he loses too much of what Bush had in states like Florida, in Michigan and Pennsylvania, where these swing states, he hurt himself.
Well, and I think they have already hurt themselves to the degree that they can't get it back. And not so much because of Bush, but because of all those senators and those congresspeople who just went on the attack. I mean, when there was the Mexican-American voters out there and even the immigrants talking about this issue, it was racist in its tone. It was just anti-American as far as I was concerned. I think they've hurt themselves with the Latino voter. And keep in mind, when you say Latino, you're talking about a lot of different kinds of Latinos. Mm-hmm. In Florida, we may even see a change there with the Cuban vote. And Mexican-Americans in Florida are becoming much larger in number. So what will happen there? I heard on NPR just, a couple weeks ago about the two congressional races where you have Democratic Cubans, you know, challenging, you know, the incumbent Cubans, and they have a chance of winning. So it's going to be a change. I don't know where they're going to go, but they're not going to get Bush's numbers either in 2000 or 2004 in terms of the Latino vote. Now, I think McCain, frankly, because of where he has stood in the past on immigration, has a better chance for them than any other possible Republican nominee. But I don't think he's going to do it because he's had to move farther to the right than he wanted to move on this issue. If he's only talking about border patrol, that's not going to get it with Latino voters.
All right. And Bob Ray put his finger on the different types of Latino voters. Obviously, they're different types. But there was a poll after the 2006 election showing how recent arrivals to the country, and these are legal immigrants, who moved away from the – they've been very solidly in Bush's camp in 2004, moved very fast to the Democratic Party in 2006. And these were Republican-leaning voters. And after the immigration debate, they went to the Democratic Party. And that's the kind of voter that McCain really ought to be thinking about. And I agree with Bob Ray. I think that they have hurt themselves too much. They can't get the 40%, but they just can't let it completely drop out of sight.
And frankly, Bush dropped the ball on this, and partly it was because of 9/11. I mean, he came into office, you know, with this, you know, the immigration issue on the front burner. He had to take it off the front burner, and that hurt, frankly. He didn't think about it for a long time. He was going to cooperate with Vicente Fox, and they were going to deal with all of these issues, and it went away. Instead, we started passing laws of building fences. Well, I mean, nobody that I know of is really happy with that idea. And I think they've lost that one.
All right.
I want to talk for a minute about bias. And I think my statistics on this come from something that you wrote, Bob Ray. So I'm going to assume, as my colleague, that you're correct. You wrote about perhaps 10 to 15% of Americans who are admittedly racist that would not consider voting for Barack Obama simply because he's black. And I don't want to compare these two things as apples to apples, but I'm wondering if there's also an ageist bias that John McCain has to face that nobody's talking about, but in fact would keep a similar percentage of Americans from considering voting for someone who goes into office at 72 years old.
I think there is, frankly. And considering that we'll have probably the largest number of young people voting that we've ever had, and as one who fought for the 18-year-old right to vote and then regretted it for years because they didn't vote, I mean, I could shake them because they really didn't vote. And then this year we saw, at least in the primary, that they did not only voted, got involved in these campaigns. There are some people, and I think primarily younger people, people under 40, who will say, hey, I'm not voting for an old man. It's time for some young blood in the White House. I think that exists. To what degree, I don't know.
Yes, I think there are people who are not going to vote for John McCain because they think he's too old. I don't quarrel with that notion. I think there will be people who will fit that category.
And every time he has one of those senior moments, you know, where he just misspeaks himself or—
Which we all have, but nobody's—
Listen, I'm carrying things in my pocket right now to remind myself of things.
But I will say, I think he is not Bob Dole, if you will, who are basically the same age. I mean, I think McCain is a young 71, and he's very vigorous, and I don't really worry about him being out of touch, or you know, when Reagan was at this point, people began to, or a little later, began to worry about him. You know, McCain seems like a very, very, very active guy.
Now I'm not running for president, but I can tell you right now. I mean, there are people in my office who will say, "Oh, golly, I mean, you talked about computer. Don't talk to Bob Ray about it." You know, when you got a president today who doesn't know anything about the computer, and that's almost driving this election, the internet and all that. And McCain just says, hey.
But you hire people who do.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jim in Fort Worth. Hi, Jim.
Yes, thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
I have a sidebar question about bias. I've noticed that everybody harped on Obama for not wearing a flag pin, which I don't think you should have to wear one. I think you should be able to celebrate your patriotism any way you want to. But no one has said a thing about John McCain not wearing one. I've seen 100 different pictures of him, and he's never had a flag pin on. And him being a Republican, and that's one of their core beliefs, why wouldn't he wear one?
You know, I almost wrote a column on that, and I'm really disappointed that Barack Obama felt he had to bow down to that, because I'm one who believes that you don't wear your patriotism and you don't wear your religion. You know, show me. I mean, I had an old aunt who said, you know, I'd rather see it than hear about it. You know, don't talk to me about that. And one of the things I really do respect about John McCain, even though his ad people now are, you know, really focusing in on his, quote, patriotic nature because of his having been a prisoner of war, he never felt the necessity that I could tell to wear a flag pin to say I'm patriotic. I mean, we assume that. I mean, the fact that he served and that kind of thing. Barack Obama felt that in moving to the center, he had to deal with that symbolic thing of putting a flag pin on because it was resonating apparently with the percentage of the voters. I'm very disappointed in that, but that's the reality.
I'm kind of with you. I hate that too. I don't really like that. I had a professor at the University of Texas during Richard Nixon's days who got up, and I thought he had made a very good point. He said, you know what really bothers me about him? He wears that flag lapel like it is his and only his, and the people who support him, and belongs to all of us. And I just don't think you have to show a flag lapel to show you're patriotic. Barack Obama's patriotic. You know, gosh, the guy's running for president of the United States. How much more patriotic could you be than want to run the country? I mean, I don't like those
things. But you still got a percentage who believe he's a Muslim and probably is secretly plotting to overthrow the country. So,
Do you think that nonsense really resonates with people who are not really out there? I mean, it seems to me that educated voters, including those who wouldn't vote for Obama,
must understand.
There are educated voters.
They are. But how many uneducated voters are there? That's, you know, we were talking before the show about, you know, I mean, what percentage will it take to win this election? I mean, I don't know how many people will, you know, or I said 10 to 15%, and that's what the polls were showing back during the primary season, who wouldn't vote for him because he's black. Well, is that enough to keep him from winning the election? I'd like to think it's not. I'd like to think that not enough people who think he's Muslim and would vote against him because they think he's Muslim or went, you know, was educated as a Muslim or whatever, that would not be enough to keep him from becoming president. I'd like to think that America has moved that far, but I don't know. What if it's a 2% margin.
I think those who are in that camp are going to vote against Obama, period. I think they were going to vote against him, but I would be concerned about that if I were Obama. I think it's silly. I think it's ridiculous. But I think there are going to be some who are just going to – the Muslim – whether he's a Muslim or not, debate, I think those folks aren't going to vote for him.
And frankly, I don't want this to sound as disparaging to the Republican Party. Frankly, I think they were already Republicans. They wouldn't have voted for him or anybody else who was Democrat anyway. Right. But
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Alberto's on the line in Garland. Hi, Alberto.
Hi, how are you, Chris?
Great, thanks.
It's good to be on your show again. I just want to make a comment and a question to the gentleman. I'm originally from the Rio Grande Valley, Mexican-American, and I have grown up being a Democrat my whole life. Basically, what reinforced the, I guess, being quote-unquote leftist, even though I consider myself more of a moderate or perhaps leaning towards the conservative because of my upbringings, being of Mexican descent and the Catholic faith and whatnot. It's been kind of difficult for me, having supported Hillary Clinton and having seen Obama take the unofficial nomination as of right now, and trying to decide between Obama and McCain. One thing I have noticed is that all of the major media outlets have only discussed Obama and McCain, given the fact that there are other candidates out there, including Ralph Nader with his running mate, Matt Gonzalez, who happens to be from the Rio Grande Valley as well. And it's just, I'm just kind of interested in what your panelists think about what it will take for either of the major candidates to take the Hispanic vote.
Well, Alberto, we will get an answer for you after the break. I know with these two that there's no way that we'll get this finished in the next 30 seconds we have before we have to go. My guests are William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News and Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We're talking this afternoon about the 2008 presidential elections and how the candidates are defining themselves and each other and the voters. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. If you find the lines full, send an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests are William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News and Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We're talking about the 2008 presidential elections. And before the break, Alberto called and was talking about being a Latino voter and trying to make his decision. Any response?
Well, I mean, and he was a Latino voter who actually was supporting Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. which a lot of them did, obviously, throughout, and especially here in Texas and in California and throughout the Southwest. But, and again, I don't know what either has to do, because on the question of immigration, frankly, Obama and McCain are not that far apart on the mm-hmm. on the immigration issue. I mean, you can start parsing it, and Obama's probably not talking about building fences and that kind of thing. But and that's not the only thing that Latinos are interested in either. You know, I mean, their children have to be educated. They have to talk about all those things that are facing everybody else in terms of economics. So I think that Latinos are going to have to do exactly what everybody else in America is going to do. Who is the person who's going to be the best for America at this time? And in terms of connecting to the world, and I think this is where Obama is going to win some favor. And we'll see this as he tours Europe this week. This country has been alienated from the world for the past 7 years. I mean, not just South America or Africa or Europe or, you know, the Mideast. Obama, I think, is trying to tell the world that he can bring us back into the world of nations. And I think that may resonate at least with some Latino voters.
I think McCain, perhaps not to the caller, who, if he voted for Hillary, may not be a Republican-leaning voter, but there are a number of Latino voters I've spoken to who are culturally conservative. And so things like traditional marriage and traditional families, that resonates with them. And in my conversations talking to them, one brought up the fact his McCain's desire to have more conservative judges would appeal to some of them. So I think to the extent that McCain can talk about traditional values in a way that is not hackneyed or driving away lots of other independents who are just, you know, sick of the conversation, perhaps he will be able to win some Pentecostal, evangelical Latinos.
Yeah.
But is he pro-life, McCain?
Yes. Yeah. He is not a crusader for it, but his track record in voting is very, very pro-life.
I was going to ask you about this, though, because given that typically one can assume automatically that the feminists will go to the Democratic Party and that evangelical Christians will go to the Republican Party, the Republican mm-hmm. candidate. Given that both of these guys have problems with those groups, do you think people who decide that they just can't get on board, feminists who can't get on board with Obama, will they vote for McCain or will they stay home? And the same thing for evangelicals who can't quite endorse McCain.
See, I think that McCain is more at risk of losing some evangelicals. You know, there's a large number, and I'm not talking just Latino, I'm talking evangelicals in general. More moderate evangelicals are speaking out on issues like environment and on poverty and relations around the world. I think Obama, who met with a group of 30 religious leaders a couple of weeks ago, some of whom were evangelicals, Barack may win some of these voters over. So I think McCain really needs to step that up. Feminists, I think they will go for Barack.
Yeah, I mean, I think even though people talk about staying home, and many of them are angry because they just, you know, really wanted Hillary to win. But in the long run, they're not going to sit this election out. This is not the election that you sit out. And I think Hillary's going to have a large part to deal with that, do with that, because I think she's going to be out there on the campaign trail.
Let's speak to Gwenike in Grand Prairie. Hi, Gwenike.
Yes, how are you, Chris?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. My question actually has been answered a little bit, but let me put it this way. What will exactly John McCain do to convince the social conservatives who are really not convinced of his views, like, that concern them, because they are really not with him? What exactly will he do to bring them on board?
I think that's a very good question, because without a doubt, there are many people within the Republican Party who cannot stand John McCain, who resent the fact that he's the nominee, but he's what they've got. Now, will they come and support him? I don't think they have any other choice unless they, in fact, do stay home. How he convinces them, I don't know. I mean, they think that he's not going to be true. I mean, some of them at least think that he's not going to be true to his word, that he's not going to be the conservative that he's now claiming to be, because, frankly, I don't think he is conservative. I think he is much more moderate than most Republicans or than many Republicans want. I don't know how he does it.
All right. Well, I think one thing he could do in this brought up a second ago about Latinos, he can probably talk about his policies in terms of the types of judges he supports. And that is sends a signal about the fact you're more likely to see a John Roberts or a Samuel Alito under McCain than you would under Obama. And I think that would have some resonance. However, I think this is McCain's great dilemma. And I think he needs to do as much as he can to send that signal, but I think he needs to worry more about the independents and the moderates in some of these swing states and really go after them, because I think that the cultural conservative war that has been fought by the Republican Party, I think it's reaching its limits of a tolerance with the public, and that could, you know, he could win the base and get slaughtered. I think he needs to scramble this election to win.
Do either one of you think that Americans will fully unite behind whoever is elected? It looks like it's going to be a nail biter, regardless of which man wins. It appears right now that it will have been a very close race, and the vote will be pretty closely divided. Are we going to walk into another 4 years of Americans resenting the other half of Americans who voted for someone different?
I think that's going to depend on whoever gets elected. And I think both of these men have the capability of crossing over, you know, crossing the aisle, so to speak, bringing in people into the cabinet who are not just of their party. I think either one of them would do that. You'll probably have in McCain's administration at least a couple of Democrats. I think in probably Obama's administration, situation to have at least a couple of Republicans in the cabinet. And then it's going to come down to the Congress, because the Congress has really been the one who has divided us more than even the presidency. And I don't know if they're going to get there. And depending on how well the Democrats do, if they end up getting a lot more seats in both houses than even I think, and some people are predicting that right now, and if they decide to use that as, you know, we're going to be king of the hill for a while and we're going to do exactly to them what they did to us when they were king of the hill, that would be a mistake and we would be divided from now on, I got a feeling. I'd like to think they won't do that, even though I'm sure there are people who don't trust Nancy Pelosi mm-hmm. or Harry Reid.
Well, not to get too far off topic, but Nancy Pelosi calling the president a failure, not his policies, but the mm-hmm. president a failure, it does strike me as sort of a divisive thing right, and an illustration of that.
Well, and Congress's approval ratings are lower than President Bush's. I think two things. One is that David Borden, former Democratic senator from Oklahoma, now president of OU, held a summit back in January, brought together people of different parties to talk about this very thing. How can we move forward in the next administration? And they have a number of different ideas. I've talked to Borden and since then. And he wants to, for example, have the president meet regularly with the top committee chairman on national defense and foreign policy regularly. And I forget, you know, once a week, whenever they meet, from both parties, have them in, talk to them. And there are a number of you know, bridge building ideas that they had to get the parties talking to each other more. I think the second thing is, and I say this as a person who may be one of the few who still likes George Bush. I'm disappointed in a lot of his policies, where it's gone, but I still think he will take a long time to figure this presidency out. There will be a terrific emotional release once he is gone. I think people will be ready for something new, and I think both of these guys will be able to have that wind at their back. And I don't think either of them are going to try to set the other up to fail.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Teresa in Dallas. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I had a question in regards to the media participation in the presidential campaign. It's very, very obvious that there are two and maybe possibly three kinds of people that are voting in this 2008, primarily the issues that are set before us in regards to both of these candidates. We find that Obama, being literally somebody that was irreputable to most of us, has literally come up through the ranks in a great way, and some of us feel as though that he's been forced down our necks. And that primarily that came out of the media. I think there's a great assumption that they're making about the public that may not exist.
Assumption in what? Like, hang on, Teresa. What kind of assumption? That people
want
Obama?
Yes, that people want Obama. I'm a Black American, and basically I have a whole lot of reservations in regards to that. I feel as though that he's attempting to redefine a great many things that we've all been very much a part of in the American society. And I'm very concerned about that, and I think most voters are. I think for the most part that they've kept out of the any attention in regards to what his policies are, basically where he's come from, where he stood in times past. And all of these things are just left out. We're set to accept this personality that he has without any regard for all of what he, you know, those authority issues that he's going to be taking on as a president.
Well, Teresa, I think you've raised some interesting points, so let's make sure we have time to get a response. Thanks so much.
Well, first of all, I mean, I disagree with her at all. It's easy to say the media, you know, presented this character. His campaign has been very media savvy. I give him that. I mean, they have worked this thing. I mean, from his, you know, rallies here in Dallas or Fort Worth or Houston or University of Texas. I mean, he captures the attention of people. Now, the media didn't put him out there. The media came on board because he got out there and it started attracting attention. Now, the truth is, in this day and time, it doesn't take much to find out what a candidate has said, what he is doing, what he really thinks. You can find his position on issues. He bought, I mean, prior to the Texas primary, he bought ads full-page ads in both newspapers on various issues for 5 days in a row, 5 or 6 days in a row, saying, here's what I believe, and for more information, go here. I mean, I don't think there's any mystery about this man any more than what people are trying to make a mystery, and it's really distorting who he is more than really telling who he is. I mean, I disagree with the caller.
Right, and I agree. And all due respect to the caller, I mean, they can go out and vote for who they want to, and people did vote. To Democrats selected Barack Obama as their nominee. So, you know, the more went for him than went for Hillary Clinton. So there you go. Having said that, I do think that the media has been more interested in Obama than any of the other candidates. And you look at, you know, as a perfect example, this trip to Afghanistan and Iraq. I read this last week, so I don't know for sure if they followed through, but all three anchors were going to go with him on this trip. Well, you know, they weren't going to go with McCain on that. That's the sort of thing I think that could be one of those factors that flies back in Obama's face come fall. And I would be worried about that if I were the Obama people, that there could be too much of a media swoon that just is still there around him. I would worry about it. But, you know, as far as whether he was shoved down people's throat, no, not in the primaries. In the fall, they have every right and chance to go vote against him if they feel that way.
Right. And again, I mean, when you take that decision, and I'm sure that if McCain decided to go back to Iraq, they'd probably want to go with him now, too. But the thing is, I mean, he is a very different candidate. He's an unlike any candidate we've ever had in the history of this country. He is, you know, African-American. He is very young. He is Kennedy-esque, if you will. The attraction is there. So, I mean, and he is drawing the media attention. And poor John McCain, I got to give, you know, he's the one who said, why doesn't Barack go to Iraq? Well, he's in Iraq.
Right. But let's go back to what I was talking about. 1896, you had the media savvy, if you will, probably wasn't the term back then, flashy candidate, William Jennings Bryan. Who became president? William McKinley, not William Jennings Bryan.
Yeah, but also keep in mind, let's go back to 1896. Which was not 2008. I mean, we're 1890. We had what? I guess the Spanish-American War was out there somewhere too. But it was a different time. It was a totally different time. 1896 was also Plessy versus Ferguson.
Right.
You know,
well,
so I mean,
yeah,
I mean, it was a very different time.
But you had the same circumstance where you have a flash guy versus a guy who's not flash, and the non-flash guy won.
Well, and I give it McCain. And as I told you earlier, if there's any party who knows how to lose an election, Democrats know how to do that. So I'm not assuming that Barack Obama is going to be the president of the United States in January. But I think it is his to lose.
I wish that we could let people see the amount of hand gesturing and passionate arm flailings that are taking place from both of my guests today. In a word, and we literally have about 20 seconds left, how negative is this presidential election going to get?
I think it's going to get very negative, not on the part of the two candidates, but their surrogates will be very negative. I mean, we're going to hear some of the worst things we've ever heard about either of these candidates.
I would agree. I don't think it'll be the candidates. It'll be their supporters.
So they'll let someone else do it for them. The dirty work.
Yes.
Or independently.
Mm-hmm. William McKenzie's columns appear in the Dallas Morning News. Bob Ray Sanders writes for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We'll check in with them again in a month or two to talk about the progress of the McCain and Obama campaigns. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.